I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
September, by the way, and we talked about this a few minutes ago, how it's a tough topic for the morning, but an important one. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and we've been running some of the sound bites from Emily McKay from Quinnipiac, but we just thought we'd bring her on in person and talk a little bit more about this in detail. She teaches in the social work department at Quinnipiac. Professor, good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I guess first and foremost, you know, I have three teenagers, so I think about this stuff a lot, and especially as we let our kids go more and more. I'm just curious, first and foremost, for people listening who didn't hear Morgan Cunningham's news reports from before, what are some of the trends? I don't know if you have Connecticut stats, but generally speaking, in this area of suicide.
Yeah, absolutely. So in Connecticut, suicide's the 11th leading cause of death. But it's second among those ages 10 and 34. The rate is highest in the state for those ages 25 to 34, and thankfully lowest for the age group under 10. But we do know that it's an area of concern. Obviously, the numbers are high. So from 2017 to 2021, there were just over 2,000 deaths due to suicide. And in that same period, there were also just about 7,000 hospital admissions for a suicide attempt, with the majority of those related to a drug overdose. You know, this is an area definitely that is affecting individuals of all age groups, and it's something we should be considering.
So, I mean, are there, with that, the volatile 25 to 34 or 10 to 34, are there more than 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yeah, so we saw a steady increase basically from 2000 to 2018, about a 14% increase. Or excuse me, rather, a 35% increase, and the rate was 14%. That's nationally. It actually peaked in 2018, and then it went down about 5% in 2020. But now we've seen it rise again back to those 2018 levels. So we are kind of watching it. The data, you know, I think that we're still trying to figure out what kind of happened during the pandemic and so forth. But certainly we're seeing the rates increase to the point that we should be concerned, both, you know, in Connecticut as well as nationwide.
No, I don't know if this is part of your work or part of your opinion, but you know, say that, you know, 2018, I mean, technology was still such a big factor. It's not that a lot has changed. I mean, social media may be more intense, but, you know, is it about social isolation? Is it about the images they see on social media? I mean, there's no way to know, but like, what are some of the things leading the way that's really making a lot of our kids want to take this drastic step?
Yeah. So, you know, for youth, they're under a lot of pressure. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of talk about social media, and social media is really kind of a two-sided coin here. I mean, certainly there, you know, youth can access, you know, disturbing images on social media. They can access tutorials on how to engage in self-harm or even, you know, methods around suicide. We know that social media, excessive use of social media, can lead to declining mental health. It's never just one thing, but on the other hand, there's also some positives around kind of access to community online and getting access to help and support online. So it's both. It's really more about healthy use and responsible use of social media. But we know that, you know, youth and in general, folks are struggling with more mood disorders like depression. You know, youth are more at risk for substance use because of, you know, risk taking. They're a little bit more impulsive. They're under a lot of stress with school, you know, pressure, academic stress. They may experience peer rejection. They might experience, you know, heightened conflict with their parents or other parental figures. We also see, you know, some youth are going to be a little bit more vulnerable because maybe they have a family history of mental health challenges. And we know sometimes they have access to means, whether they are utilizing medication that perhaps they can get with other peers, or they're able to access guns in a family home.
So we're talking with Emily McCabe, professor of social work at Quinnipiac University here in Bryan and Company. What if, you know, someone listening is concerned about somebody in their life? Well, it could be a kid, could be a brother, cousin, friend, or whatever. What are some of the things you can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one is just asking people how they're doing. We kind of have a, you know, how are you? And we expect that, oh, I'm fine. But really kind of having a conversation and noticing any changes in behavior, mood, kind of how they're presenting in terms of, you know, if they're not sleeping as well or they're not eating as well, really looking for a change in kind of, you know, how they're are in their daily life. And then just having a conversation and asking them how they're doing and letting them know that you're concerned, kind of pointing out what it is, the changes that you've seen, and that you know that there's support out there. The good news is that by and large, people do better when they get help. And so there's a lot of great resources out there. If someone was really concerned about a loved one or family member or colleague, and you think that person might be suicidal now or having thoughts about suicide, you can always call 211 in Connecticut and press 1, and that's going to get you access to mobile crisis, which is both for youth and adults. And we also have the nationwide text line and talk line, which is 988.
All right. So what if the person in your life is resistant to getting help? Is there anything?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people need to be able to want it, you know, before they can reach out, unless, of course, it's an emergency. In that case, you may need to call 211 or 911 or 988 yourself if it's truly someone's at imminent risk. But if it sounds like they're just saying that they've been having maybe like more dark thoughts lately or feeling like they don't necessarily want to be here and they're struggling, just letting them know that you're a person that they can come and talk to, encourage them maybe to go talk to their primary care doctor, or even if they'd be willing to just talk to a counselor once, maybe offer to go with them, you know, that we're really not that scary as therapists. But it is intimidating. And so just making sure you're a constant presence and letting them know that even if they don't want to talk today, that you're there another day and that there's resources out there for you.
Emily McCabe.
I also want to just encourage them to utilize whatever kind of self-supports they've had in the past.
Yeah. And what about, you know, in terms of Suicide Prevention Week and month and sources, resources out there, like, is there any websites or places people can go and they're listening maybe to bookmark in case they ever want to access?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple great organizations. So one is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. That's at www.afsp.org. That has great resources for around issues around suicide prevention, as well as for those who may be thinking about suicide or those who are dealing with the loss of someone to suicide. There's also the Hamden Out of the Darkness Walk, as well as other walks across the state this coming fall. That they can join a walk if they want to raise money for suicide prevention. And then if you want to get trained to be able to help someone who maybe is struggling with a mental health challenge or suicidal thoughts, you can take a mental health first aid class, which is like a physical first aid class, except for mental health concerns. And you can find trainings at www.mentalhealthfirstaid.org.
Nice. Are you getting a lot of, are students still getting this major, getting MSWs? I mean, is the student population to work in your field doing well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We're actually seeing an increase in enrollment in our MSW program, and I think that's around the state as well. There's an increased demand for social workers, not just here in Connecticut, but nationwide. So it's a great program, a great career to look into, very rewarding, and there's so much that we can do as social workers. So if anyone's interested, they can certainly reach out to me at Quinnipiac's MSW program.
Yeah, my wife has an MSW, so
it's fantastic.
You can do a lot of things with it, too, and help a lot of people. Emily, thanks so much for the time. It's an important topic.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Emily McCabe. Professor of Social Work at Quinnipiac University.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.